T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Evaluation process, because we like to get live on campus watching practices, see these guys move around, talk to people, games. Later in the year, we were able to go to games and sit in stands, and it was a weird year, but you're trying to gather information. It's easier when you're on campus, you're bumping into this coach, you're bumping into this trainer, whoever. It's harder to line up Zooms or get people on the phone, you know, more than to bump into people. So it's been a harder process, a longer process, but I think we're in a good position. And listen, every team's having to do it, so it's our job to find the advantages in the Zoom world we're in.
Bill's GM Brandon Bean from, I was going to say earlier this week, but actually yesterday, I believe. He was on with us, and he also did a Zoom call, his pre-draft Zoom call, if you will, with the media. Both of those, it's a long way of getting to. Both of those are available in on-demand audio at WGR550.com. If you want to go give them a listen, maybe you didn't have a chance to hear either one of them, they're both there. On the top, happy Thursday, by the way. Thanks for hanging out with us on the topic of the draft. Well, we were talking about schedule in the first hour. League coming out yesterday and announcing the schedule will come out Wednesday, May 12th at 8 p.m. Sal's going to join us at 8. Brayton referred to it in the headlines there a moment ago in the update. We're going to talk more about his conversation with Mike North from the broadcasting department with the league. Primetime games should be a whole bunch for the Bills. National TV windows, late Sunday afternoon. Would you like to see the Bills in the Thursday night opener against Tampa? They're in the conversation for that game. So we started there. Phone lines open, 803-0550, 888-550-2550, and we'll transition a little bit into the draft and talk about the guy at Clemson who wears number 9, who wore number 9 for the Clemson Tigers, and Travis Etienne.
Yeah, a little bit on him, and also a little bit on Jason Away, the defensive end from Penn State.
Yeah.
He's an interesting one. You know, I think you do a couple things when we try to figure out what the Bills are looking for and who the Bills will draft, right? If you were to say Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, I know that Bean wasn't here for the first draft, but, you know, what do they look for in players? I think there's a couple things, of course, like football DNA, Bills DNA, how much they love the game, will they fit their culture, you know, that kind of thing. The other thing they look for a lot of, I think, so far, is tools, right? We talked about it yesterday with Brandon Bean about, well, this guy might come in and be ready, but this other guy has a higher ceiling because of the athleticism that he possesses. And, you know, maybe he gets to that higher ceiling in a year or two. You know, we were asking about a high ceiling guy versus a high floor guy, if their grade is the same or do you have ranges of grades. And if we're talking about tools, well, let's just list the draft picks that they've gone for tools on. It's Josh Allen, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Tremaine Edmonds. It's Dawson Knox. I'm thinking about Jason Away as a guy that with tools,
yeah,
because he's fast, he's got this and this and this. He didn't have any sacks.
He didn't have production, right. The numbers aren't really there, right.
How about Devin Singletary? Never caught a pass. Yeah, but we think he can. You know, the Bills are their scouting staff and their personnel people, it seems like they do a fairly good job of, all right, just because of what you did in college, that doesn't mean that's who you are. I think about this going back to Sammy Watkins, too. I mean, it's not a great example, different staff. But Watkins, there was the number that, well, you know, 57% of his passes caught were behind the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that is, well, that's because they covered him so that they would give that. You know, if you're playing college football, Clemson's job is to win games. It is a feeder system for the NFL, but you're not exactly trying to showcase this player perfectly. It's about winning games. And if they're going to double team him over the top, then you're going to throw bubble screens and let him go to work. And, you know, thinking about Jason Owe or Travis Etienne, to me, they both fit the bill because the Bills go for these players that have tools. And I'm trying to think of, like, who am I missing on the roster that they talk about like this? Knox is a big one. Knox didn't catch a touchdown in college, right?
And yeah, but he was such – there was such a
right.
raw ability and a potential there they were, you know, that they felt.
It's not even necessarily to say projects. It's just to say tools. All right, sure, I've seen your career, but I know what you probably can become. So we'll take some chances on guys like that. Mm-hmm. And I'll read you a quick thing about Jason Owe because this is from Bruce Feldman at The Athletic. He talked to a pair of defensive coaches about Jason Owe who had, again – no sacks last year.
Literally. You're not talking about didn't have a lot of sacks. He had zero sacks.
Zero sacks. You're going to take an edge rusher in the first round that didn't have a sack. And the he talked to two defensive coaches. Here's what they said. Defensive coach number one. He's such a freak athlete. I know he didn't have any sacks last year, but he was still really disruptive. He does things that don't show up on the stat sheet. You watch their Indiana game, he hit the quarterback like 10 times. He's not soft. I think he's way better than Yetur Gross-Matos, who went to Carolina at 38 last year. He's got a way higher ceiling. Defensive coach number two was at the pro day. He's a freak. The measurables are so good. His get-off is so good. He's so fast going straight forward. He's a tough evaluation. But when you watched him do the linebacker drills, he was really stiff. I think he's a 4-3 end. I didn't think he could be a 3-4 outside backer. I don't think he's flexible. He's very tight-hipped. He could become a 15-sack guy or could be out of the league in 3 years. You know, like, the tools are there. And this I'm kind of going back to one of our NHL draft conversations where you love the size on this player, but he didn't score in juniors.
Mm-hmm.
So what should you do? Should you stay away from a guy that had no sacks? Because my knee-jerk reaction is to say yes, but the Bills do draft for tools.
Yeah, it was interesting listening to Dane Brugler, also from The Athletic. He was on with Chris and with Steve yesterday on One Bills Live. And Chris, there are a couple points I think to bring up. One of them actually was brought up during the Zoom call with Brandon Bean the other day, specific to edge rushers. So Chris mentioned four guys specifically, and one of them was OA from Penn State, I think, right? And, you know, so Brugler talked about, he didn't have any sacks, but he's consistently in the backfield. He affects the quarterbacks. He said he'll be a better pro than he was a college player. And it is odd, Jeremy. I would tell you that I would look at it and go, what? They drafted a guy in the first round who had no sacks and he's an edge rusher? What the hell are you doing? But I you know, again, what skill set does he have? What do you see? He ran a 4.37 40. That's fast for a running back.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing I think that's interesting when we're talking about edge rushers now. Look, first and foremost, edge rushers, what do we want? Sacks. We want sacks. We want some forced fumbles. We want some game-changing plays. We want all that. But the discussion about quarterbacks and how quickly they get the ball out, two things have changed about quarterbacks, right? Even Ben Roethlisberger was getting the ball out in like 2 seconds last year. Nobody holds on to the ball more. They're moving. They want to get it out fast to try and negate pass rush. Also, too, as quarterbacks have committed in recent years over the college, and we see college concepts, and we see different types of quarterbacks, there aren't pocket passers anymore. Like the kid from Alabama, who I guess would be the exception to the rule, you know, wherever he's drafted this year. Not the most mobile guy in the world. But they brought this up with Brugler, and someone mentioned it with Bean the other day. I thought about it when he was talking about Mahomes. How do you get Mahomes? How do you defend Mahomes? Well, you better have some rushers who can flush the pocket and then be able to chase the guy. Because he's not standing back there.
Right.
The Josh Allens, the Patrick Mahomeses, the Lamar Jacksons, all these quarterbacks now, what do? You got to have a guy who can stop on a dime, change direction, reverse speeds, and then get out on the edge. And maybe he doesn't track Mahomes down from behind. But to chase him, to have pressure, to continue to put pressure on him. It isn't just straight line speed to the quarterback off the edge, beat the tackle anymore. It is change of direction and being able to have speed to get out and chase a quarterback, because that's what quarterbacks do now. They get out to the edges. You got to chase Josh Allen.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about how this is a little bit of a sacks or a quarterback stat. The ball's coming out. You can't get there in 2.5 seconds.
Right, it's really hard.
It's how the Bills had a really good pass rush win rate, where that means you beat your block in 2.5 seconds, but it feels like they didn't have a good pass rush.
Right.
Because the ball's out so quickly. Now, as you talk about chasing down a quarterback, you know what play I'm thinking that you might want Jason away on the field? The Hail Mary.
Hail Mary. I was thinking about that as I was telling you about chasing guys. I was honestly, because they got pressure on that play. They chased him.
And I know you're not drafting a first-round defensive end just for that play.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is, right, how do you get to Mahomes? The way the Bucs got to him is their line was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
But can you do you change the position to some degree where you're going with delayed rushes and, hey, see where he goes, and then with your 4-3 speed and your change of direction – you're like our anchor guy. You know, you're not a traditional passer. I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing the idea to follow up on what you said, because it makes sense as quarterbacks either get it out or get it athletic.
That's right.
If I can't get there in 2.5 seconds, I've got to stop the getting athletic part of it and find a way to beat him to the edge.
Yeah, I think it always used to be, I mean, okay, if you're my age and you were raised in the 70s and you watch football, the edge rusher, the defensive end, was all about, okay, just beat the guy. Whether it's, you know, your burst to the outside, or you got a great move to the inside, or whatever the case, but you got to beat the tackle, get to the quarterback, and bring him down. And as time has changed, it's not just change of direction, but now what else do we talk about that's really important with edge guys in this day and age against these quarterbacks? Contain, right? It isn't necessarily, okay, you're going to rush to contain. Don't necessarily have to rush to tackle the quarterback. Sure, we want sacks. But when you rush, you better make sure you don't go upfield too far, because this guy will just leave the pocket and he'll get out to the edge and we're screwed. So that's why I thought, you know, I don't know what the Bills were thinking with the kid from Penn State. I heard more about his speed and his ability to flush, change direction. Like they mentioned, like, this is why they actually have like the 3-cone drill. You know, the ability to rush, to not necessarily tackle. I'm not saying you don't want to sack the quarterback. You might think I'm nuts. I don't mean that. But it's changed to the point where now you have to have the ability to rush and sometimes contain. You don't want Mahomes getting out of the pocket. Ideally, he stays inside there, and you get to him eventually, because once he gets on the edge, he makes freakish plays. So does the guy here.
Right, and it's more than just Mahomes. I mean, it's Justin Herbert does that.
Uh-huh.
It's Ryan Tannehill has done that. The Bills lost a playoff game because Blake Bortles did that to them.
And Kyler Murray did it.
Kyler Murray does that.
Yeah.
You know, to talk about mobile quarterbacks, they're all pretty athletic these days. Look at the guys that are coming out. You're mentioning Mac Jones might be the only one that can't move.
Right.
You know, there are different degrees of it. Joe Burrow can run. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, he's not Lamar Jackson. He's not Josh Allen. But the AFC is flush with good young quarterbacks. Baker can move. Even Sam Darnold can. He's in the NFC now. But if you can't move, you're not keeping a job, really, probably. Outside of Brady, he's like maybe the only one still, right? Now that Breeze is gone, too.
Well, you know what? Think about it. Again, even when you were raised as a football fan, it was all about you pocket quarterback. You didn't talk about anything other than, can the guy stand back there and chuck the ball? And now it's, how many times do we hear a defensive player get ready for a game and say, we got to make this guy a pocket quarterback?
Yeah.
We can't let him get out. We can't let him, you know, whether he's running, look at Josh Allen, whether he's running to his right or running to his left, no play is dead. Mahomes makes throws that you sit there and go, how the hell did he just do that? And it's really frustrating. You know, when you get a guy through really fast and he just kind of says, okay, fine, I'm out of the pocket. Now you come and chase me down. It's really hard to do. So, yeah, I think I thought that was interesting in the discussion of pass rushers that might be there for the Bills at the end of round one. And, you know, it's not necessarily a great group at that point, but there are guys that have some individual talents, tools. And the question is, as to get circle back to where you were at the top, what are the tools the Bills are looking for there?
Right. And that takes me to the running back conversation. So yesterday, Dane Brugler was on the guys on One Bills Live talking about Travis Etienne being a home run hitter.
Yep.
And I thought back to our conversation with Don Munson.
Yes.
Of
play-by-play
Clemson.
Guy. Yep.
Yeah, we talked to the play-by-play guy at Clemson 2 months ago. It was February 22nd that we had that conversation with him about Travis Etienne and what he offers. And, you know, you don't have to love the first-round running back idea. I'm not asking you to. I'm not campaigning for it. But the same kind of thing comes along to me. Forget about, you know, everything other than what do the Bills like, who are they, what kind of people, what kind of players, what kind of skill sets are they looking for? So a quick rundown of the highlights mm-hmm. of what Don Munson told us about Travis Etienne that day. One, how often can he play? Answer is every down.
Right.
he's a pro already. I mean, the way he goes about handling his business, I mean, he's just a pro as it is. And he's a guy that in today's National Football League is going to fit in perfectly because he's an all-down back. He's not a guy that is just, okay, well, this is going to be the guy that runs and then this is going to be the guy that receives. Uh-uh. Travis can do it all. And he is really good at pass pro, protecting a quarterback as well. He's a good blocker. And he's just a good teammate. I mean, he's low-maintenance, high-character guy, and I think that's what probably every NFL team would love to have.
Okay, so he does it all. By the way, he went on to tell us that he can play special teams. Well, the Bills definitely. One way we could have a conversation about, I mean, I'm not sure they're going to put their first-round pick on special teams. But, you know, the Bills value that kind of thing, versatility. Okay, do they want a home run hitter? That was a phrase that Brandon Bean used.
That's what caught me yesterday when Brugler said that. That's
Dane Brugler says.
Yep.
Right. Obviously, he's a home run hitter. So how about Don Munson on the home run hitter element to Etienne's game?
I think in his career here at Clemson, I think he had 20 runs of 60 yards or more. And of those 20, I want to say 17 or 18 were for touchdowns. So it's amazing what he does. And you mentioned taking contact. That's where he's at his best. There's no doubt about that. That is where he's at. He takes that first or second shot and just doesn't go down. And then all of a sudden now he's not second level, he's third level. And once he gets that, then he got a little juke to him. He got some moves and can get by some people, and he's got much better speed than people imagine too.
Etienne also, you know, people will talk about bell cow backs. I had someone writing to me yesterday, the Bills aren't going to take him because they're not going to take a bell cow. And I think bell cow is something that we define, right? Or the team defines based on usage. I agree the Bills are not going to take a bell cow running back because they will never have a bell cow running back.
Yeah, that's not their style. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
They'll never have a bell cow running back.
How many teams do?
Exactly. And Etienne would probably, again, I'm just trying to lay out that I just think this player fits exactly what they want. I don't know if they'll be willing to spend that pick or if he slides into the second if they'd make a move. But he's been a big star for Clemson, but still probably has a lot of tread left on the tires.
Yeah.
He only got 20 carries in a game 3 times in his entire career. So that's the other thing. Whoever gets him is getting a running back with very low mileage on it, very low wear and tear. And I think that's the other really big plus for anybody that's a GM or, you know, whoever is in the war room looking at is that you're not getting a guy that all of a sudden is like, you know, a Wisconsin back that was carrying the ball and all that wear and tear. That's not what you're getting in Travis Etienne. His best days are still way ahead of him, and he's just now kind of obviously maturing. You know, he's getting to that point, and he's going to be outstanding.
And finally, one more thing from Don here, the play-by-play of the Clemson Tigers on being the stud. I mean, think about it. We've known about him. He would have been the first running back off the board last year.
Yeah,
and he stayed in college, and he's not a guy that's been a bell cow in college, but he's been a star. He's been a stud. You knew who he was last year, and he goes on to talk about, and this one jumped out at me when I went back and listened to the interview. Again, the Bills have superstars. For a while, we would talk about whether or not a guy like this or that could fit their room. They have superstars, but they like to identify certain traits in them. And I listened to Don talk about Travis Etienne in this clip about the low-maintenance superstar, and I think, how is this guy not a fit?
He's one of the most low-maintenance superstars that I've ever been around. You can imagine what it's like being Travis Etienne around Clemson, South Carolina. Guys like he around here are, you know, worshipped. You've had Trevor that was here during his career, but so maybe the two of them split a little bit of that limelight. But Travis is one of those guys. Coach Sweeney has a saying here, let the light that's in you be brighter than the light that shines on you. That's Travis Etienne. When he walks into a room, when you sit down with him, he kind of lights everything up, and he's just extraordinarily low maintenance.
So, like, doesn't that sound
that's
like everything
fit too? Right.
That sounds
right.
Like everything the Bills want and value.
Right. That's
and it also sounds
culture,
like,
I guess, you know.
Right. So, it comes down to, for me, it's not about will they spend it. I think they will be interested.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll pull the trigger on that in the first round. I mean, I don't know if I want them to trade up in the second if he starts to drift, but I just think he's definitely on their radar, you know?
Yeah. And I thought, you know, I kind of thought he would be gone by the end of round one, but I'm trying to think. I think from what Brugler told Chris and Steve yesterday, he and each guy has their own little draft opinions, of course. I think he had Harris as the only first-round running back, and he thought Etienne could be there in round two, and the kid, one of the two kids from North Carolina, Javonte Williams, might be able to be there in round two as well. Another fast guy. 803-0550 to join us on this Thursday morning. Among the things we're discussing, schedule, NFL schedule. Since they announced yesterday, the league will have the schedule for you on May 12th, so you got to be a little patient. Wednesday, May 12th, 8 p.m., we were discussing specifically whether you'd like to see the Bills open in the Thursday night opener against Tampa Bay, which would be a road game against Tom Brady and company down in Florida. 803-0550 to join us when we get back. It is our weekly chat with Martin Baron, and we'll talk a little bit about UPL, who might make his NHL debut tonight. If not, then probably tomorrow against the Bruins. That and more coming up in a moment on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Let's talk Sabres hockey. Here's former Sabres goalie, Marty Baron. Marty Baron's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Paul William Belt, your power of attorney. By Firth Jewelers, for all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. By Relax Honda, relax, we got this. And by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, the designated cancer center of the Buffalo Sabres.
Hang on, I dropped my pen.
Hold on.
Okay. Marty Baron joining us on the West Her Hotline, and we get to talk about some goaltending stuff with, well, him. He should know something about this. Marty, it's Howard and Jeremy. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. Dropping your pen's the worst. Like, if I'm on set and I'm all hooked up to, like, the microphone and the IFB, which
sure.
is the little headphones yep. and all of that, and then you drop your pen, like, you can't move. It's
yeah.
like you're stuck.
That's
and
a big reason why I hated television. Yeah,
a full segment on the post game without a pen, and I felt lost. Like, it's the worst.
Yeah, the number of times I drop a pen, go down to reach it, and then like yank the microphone off accidentally.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You have a lot of takes on pens, Marty. Didn't we talk about a couple years ago you had one of those 4-color pens, the click pens?
That's why he doesn't like dropping the pen. He needs a crane to pick the damn thing up.
I do have the 4-color pens, and then the other night, NBC, Saturday afternoon, NBC's in town. John Forslund, the great John Forslund's doing the game, right? And he left his 4-color pen behind, like he left it on the desk.
Score.
So Tammy, one of our crew with the broadcast, she took it and then put it on my chair the next day. So I got the great John Forslund's pen now. I tweeted at him and he laughed, and so I got his pen now.
I can't believe you didn't return it. Marty, UPL, we might see him tonight. We might see him tomorrow night, but it sounds like he's going to play one of these two games. What is for a young goalie, a rookie goalie, and you went through this, so they all do, obviously, but for a young goalie, what that first NHL start, what's it like? Are you sleeping the night before? Are you not? Are you nervous when the game starts? Are you not? What are you going through?
Well, you're very nervous, that's for sure. It's a dream come true. But my experience was so different because I never practiced with the team. Mm. I showed up to Pittsburgh. I had a 20-minute morning skate, and boom, you play that night. So I think Don Granato did a great job because UPL could have played maybe Sunday, but he only had like a very short practice with the team after recovering from a slight injury in Rochester. So Don Granato said, you know what, I'm going to give him a chance to succeed and take his time and get some more practices in before he plays. But this is the time of year where you're going to get players getting that opportunity. You saw Spencer Knight with the Florida Panthers. He got an opportunity. Why? I'm not really sure. Sergei Bobrovsky is playing really good. Chris Drieger, is playing really, really good, and people are going to say, who's Chris Rieger? Well, he's the backup in Florida, but he's got like a 935 save percentage or something crazy this year. So he's playing really good. But they decided, you know what? Spencer Knight has been practicing with the team. Let's give him a shot. He won the game 5-1. Montreal has got to, you know, probably play Caden Primo. He's Keith Primo's son. You guys remember Keith Primo the Red Wings and the Flyers and all of that. So, and the Carolina Hurricanes, Wayne's nephew. So anyway, Caden Primo's probably going to be playing with the Montreal Canadiens because Price is out with a concussion. So I think it's interesting that these young goalies are now going to get a shot, but I love it. I can't wait to see if Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is going to play tonight or tomorrow and how that's going to work out and what he can show at the National Hockey League level. It's been a tough year in Rochester. He's played okay, but the Rochester Americans, I mean, they barely have any player. With the guys that are called up to Buffalo, the taxi squad and everything, they're short on players. So it's been a tough year for him for sure to be able to play behind a good team.
Marty, what, in terms of his game, since we haven't seen him up with the Sabres yet, obviously, what can you tell us, if anything, style, strengths, what's his game all about? Can you give any kind of background on him?
Yeah, he's tall. He's got great size, and he uses it really well. A little bit more that European-type goaltender. He said yesterday he loves Pekka Rinne, right? So Pekka Rinne is a tall goalie, athletic goaltender. So I think we're going to see the same thing out of UPL. He plays on his knees really well because of his size and the new ways of playing goal. Goalies are on their knees a lot, especially around the net. When the puck's around the net, the post play, he plays on his knees a lot, and he's really good at it. But he's able to cover the top of the net because he's able to keep his shoulders up and usually be a pretty big in net. So those are the basics of Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. Now, he's got good speed laterally, but does he have NHL speed laterally? And I think that's what is going to be able to give us a glimpse of what he has to continue working on. Getting a game here, maybe a second or third game in the last couple of weeks of the season. I hope so. I hope it's not just one and done. I hope they're able to give him one and possibly two or three. So that's, the speed is going to be the one thing that I'm going to be looking at, because that's the biggest difference between playing in the minors and playing in the NHL is the speed of the game.
We're with Marty Baron on our Western Hotline. Speaking of speed, very good, Mr. Braun. You transitioned me over to Dylan Cousins, and I wanted to ask you, I mean, one of the many things we love when watching Jack Eichel, his ability to get the puck and go whoop, right up ice. I mean, here we go. Watch him fly. We've seen Cousins do that now. He did it again the other day in the last game where he just gets the puck, zips up the left side of the ice, blows by the forwards, beats the defenseman wide, goes to the net for a chance. As you watch more and more of this kid, what's your excitement level like? What's the ceiling for this kid?
I'm excited to see what he can be in a year or two when he matures, when his body matures a little bit too, because you got to understand, he's not afraid to go in the physical battle. He goes in there. He's just not like a man yet. He doesn't have that man's strength yet, and I think he'll get it, but his speed, his explosiveness is great. Don Granato talked about the first couple of strides with Dylan Cousins. Like, he just can create that separation right away. But what's even more impressive, in my opinion, is that he carries that straight speed throughout the whole length of the ice. If he gets the puck in the defensive zone, he gets explosiveness right away with the puck. But through the neutral zone and even entering the offensive zone and cutting to the net with the puck, he keeps getting faster and faster as he gets through the neutral zone, the offensive zone. And that, to me, is something that a lot of players don't have. They have the first 3-4 strides. They get quick, but then they plateau really quickly. You watch McDavid play. McDavid is one of those players that he's able to carry speed and even more speed the longer he has the puck, the longer he skates. And I think Dylan Cousins is like that. Not McDavid speed, but really, really high-end speed on the ice. So that's what is exciting for me, is because McKinnon, McDavid, those type of players have the long range speed, and Dylan Cousins have that.
In the discussion of young guys that are playing well right now, Cousins is not alone, of course. We would also add Casey Mittelstand. Now, he's going to be on with us later this morning at 9 o'clock, and what he's done in recent weeks has really been eye-opening. He's looked completely different. He looks like a much more confident player in a number of different ways. Why? What's happened with Casey Mittelstand that has allowed him to play at the level he's been at the last few weeks?
I think one big difference is now we're focusing on the strength of Casey Mittelstand, and I think he's focusing on his own strength as opposed to looking at the weaknesses and himself as a player saying, well, I'm not the fastest or I'm not the biggest or I'm not great in the face of that. And, well, you know what? Put that aside. Focus on this, on your strength. What are you good at? Well, I'm pretty quick. When Casey Mittelstand gets going, his first three or four strides, he's really quick. Well, instead of trying to have the puck on your stick for 20 strides up the ice, have it for four or five strides and then move it. Why? Because that's when your strength is. You're really quick on the first four or five strides. You can separate yourself from your back checker in that way and then move the puck. And he's doing that. He's moving the puck a lot quicker. But I really feel that, you know, with Casey Mittelstand, with Don Granato, with a lot of the Sabres now, they're really focusing on their strengths and not really looking at their weaknesses and saying, well, we have to fix that. You're never going to fix Casey Mittelstand speed from goal line to goal line. It's never going to happen. But you know what? You can build a really good hockey player from their strength and what has made them, you know, first round picks and stand out in college and at other level, and continue to build on their strengths. So I really like when Casey gets the puck, you watch, he gets really quick in three strides, and then he moves the puck, or then he uses other skill set like his hands, his vision, his hockey IQ to be able to create something. He's not just trying to become somebody he's not. And that's a sign of maturity, and that's a sign of good coaching as well.
The other guy I want to ask you about before we let you go is Sam Reinhart. Now, he's at center. They've had, you know, injuries, trade, whatever, that has thinned the ranks. And he's looked effective at center. We had Don Granato on the show on Tuesday, Marty, and he said there's no reason to put him back on wing. Let's just leave him at center. What do you think about that?
I think there's no reason to put him back on wing because of the need right now of the Sabres. But in a normal season, if you have Eichel healthy, Cousins healthy, Mittelstand healthy, I don't think there's room for Sam Reinhart at center. And unless you decided to play Sam Reinhart maybe a little lower in the lineup, maybe as a third line center, give him more the tough matchup. You say, okay, you're going to play against, you know, the Patrice Bergeron line. You're going to play against the Crosby line. Maybe that's what you would do to try to free up Eichel and maybe Cousins. I think that's for next season, a decision to be made over the summer, over next season. Right now, you're keeping him at center because you have a need at center, and there's no need to say, okay, we're going to play Riley Sheahan at center over Sam Reinhart or Cody Eakin at center over Sam Reinhart. You have Reinhart, you have Cousins, you have Mittelstand. Those are your top three center, and you're going with it, and it's working. So I don't see a need to change that right now, but you may have to make a decision over the summer as to who your center and your top three are going to be.
Hey, just so you know, no F1 this weekend. So, you know, I know you gotta work Sunday night, but you got to find something else to keep you busy this weekend.
What a race Sunday morning, right? I mean, it was amazing in the rain, the whole, you know, wet tires, intermediate tires. Lewis Hamilton making, and Jeremy, I'm sure you heard this and you laugh because Brian Duff and I talked about it in his post-race conference. He says, I made a mistake. I haven't made a mistake in a long time. Like, how about the confidence of Lewis Hamilton to say he has not made a mistake in a long time in a Formula One race? Like, that is pretty cocky, but at the same time, very confident.
And very accurate, too.
it was awesome. It was awesome. Yeah. It was great, Marty, watching that mistake meant that the race got a lot more exciting as we watched him basically climb the field. And one of the things Lewis Hamilton did, I saw, he basically sent messages to almost every other driver via social media, like Lando Norris said, like, hey, good to see you up on the podium. You did a great job. Like this, I think he's excited for a season that's going to have, you know, a lot of competition. It's definitely a better season than last year already.
And even though, like, Hamilton finished second and Verstappen won, we are used to seeing Hamilton from the front and just cruising through a victory. Mm-hmm. And what we saw him coming back and overtaking driver after driver after driver, and Lando Norris says, he's too fast for me. I can't keep up. He's too fast for me. Like, that's beneficial to Lewis Hamilton, I think, in the way that he's going to, you know, be maybe the best driver ever to race in the F1, because now he gets to show a different side of what he can do.
All right, Mr. Baron. Thank you, as always, for hockey talk, sir. Always nice having you on the show. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Well, thanks for reminding me that there's no Formula One this weekend and that I'm working on Sunday. Yeah, I mean, you always bring the good news, right?
That's what we're here for. I just want to make sure you had your big pen ready to go.
I have my big pen ready to go. I have tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. 3 and 4. I'm going to be tired after that.
Hey, make sure you ask Duff how the Astros are doing this season. He'll love that conversation.
I don't even want to bring up baseball with Mr. Duff. He's not a happy man right now.
Yeah, I get that. All right, Marty. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
All right, Marty, be good. Marty Braun on the Western Hotline, brought to you by Paul William Belch, your power of attorney. By Firth Jewelers, for all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. By Roswell Park By Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, the designated cancer center of the Buffalo Sabres, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
Have you had a chance to look at the Derby field yet? The horses?
No,
got the 20 names.
I see some tweets out this morning. I know. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, though. Oh, you got the
names?
There
was a horse. I do have all the names. Ooh. There was a horse yesterday that ran away.
Was the horse's name Runaway? I mean, is that...
No, the horse's name was Midnight Bourbon, and during bath time, apparently, this guy got loose and just started running around.
Come on, it's just like your pet dog. They don't like... maybe they don't like bath time, right? Water's cold.
Well, the funny part is, the tweet from Kent Spencer says, Midnight Bourbon, who's trained by Steve Asmussen, and you watch the video and think, I'm not sure he's that trained. He's just running around once he gets loose.
Poor thing. That's coming up. Yeah. Sal, coming up top of the hour. We'll talk more about the conversation he had with the... Vice President of Broadcasting for the NFL. A lot of good stuff about the schedule and how often the Bills might be in some primetime games this coming season. That's on the way on WGR.
It's a delicate issue. I mean, he's gotten himself to a situation where he's had the time to observe, obviously from the bench, think about it, immerse in it. But it's a game of read and react, especially that position. You know, the discussions for us would be based around understanding our system where we're forcing shots. There may be where shots are coming from on a consistent basis, how we're pressuring pucks so he gets better reads, how we're clearing pucks, shot selection for our opponent. So those are things you just want to make sure he has a feel for just through obvious preparation for him.
That is Don Granato, Sabres interman coach, talking about Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who we're waiting to see gets maybe gets the start tonight against the Bruins. If not, maybe tomorrow night.
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit better than Dustin Tokarski. You know, it just doesn't have. Right? No offense to Dustin, it just doesn't have to say Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen.
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen.
So we'll see how he does wearing number one.
I've got a tough trivia question for you. The Derby field, I can run that through, but I've got a tough trivia question. It's kind of tough.
I don't like tough.
Oh, all right. Hey, the music hits. We're doing it.
I don't like tough. Brayton, kill the music. All right, go ahead.
It's not that. It's just kind of a fun one. And we'll let texters and tweeters get in on it, too.
Oh, okay. Well, I got TweetDeck open, so that's
It's not
good.
A list. It's just, here you go. Mm-hmm. So Pro Football Focus draft, the longest a draft has taken to select a defensive player is 7 picks.
Hmm.
So the first defensive player went is 7th. Funny enough, they list the year. I just spent the entire break going back and finding where it was. So if I had read the tweet,
could have saved you a little time.
Could have saved some time.
Yeah.
So who was it? 7th overall, the first defensive player taken off the board at 7th overall. I'll give you a hint. It wouldn't be worth asking if this player's name weren't known. He is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I'm thinking more about when... So it's really hard. Like, what draft? Like, when? What possibly would have been a year where there would have been six offensive players going off the board first?
And the fact that, you know, he's a Hall of Famer means, you know, it was a good degree of time ago.
Yeah.
Decent enough to be in the Hall of Fame. He was also, I believe I mentioned him earlier today, as a defensive player that wore a single digit that would be able to wear a single digit again.
Charles Woodson.
Incorrect. Charles Woodson did not go seventh. He went earlier than that. Actually, I should find out. I should.
It's a good. That's
that.
A really good guess.
It is a good guess, but again, it's the first defensive player. That is a very good guess. He wore number two, and he's is he in the Hall of Fame or is going to be?
He's in, or no? He's going in the next class, right?
Yeah, he's got.
So.
He's got to go.
Yep.
Charles Woodson's the 1997 draft. 97.
What about what was the year? Was the 99 draft where quarterbacks went 1, 2, 3? Is
it
possible that that's the
Tim
year?
Tim Couch. That's the year 1999. Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, Akili Smith.
Okay.
So two running backs, a receiver, and then this defensive player, and every single one of the top seven picks is a household name. Akili Smith might not be.
Right, right.
But the other players, 4, 5, 6, and all the way to 7, household names.
Are you sure about Akili Smith not being a household name? In Cincinnati, it should be.
He is in the Smith household.
Hey, you once called West Virginia an elite football program, so I don't want to hear from you.
Elite program. Okay, so who went 7? And you mentioned him earlier in the single-digit discussion, which is...
I think I mentioned him in the discussion.
Oh.
Get some texts and tweets and see if anybody gets it.
Can we get the position?
Cornerback, linebacker.
If you'd like, sure. He is a defense. He was a defensive back.
Defensive back.
99.
The farthest
99, right.
The league has ever gone before a defensive player was picked was 7. This player, 1999.
Champ Bailey's not in the Hall, right? Champ Bailey. I'm trying to think of defensive backs that would be really good.
Who?
Champ Bailey. It's not. He's not in. Champ Bailey. He's not.
What number did he wear in college?
I have no idea.
4? Who'd you say?
Champ Bailey.
That's correct. Champ
Bailey.
Bailey
was the first
the
defensive player. He is in the Hall. I couldn't remember him being in the Hall.
Yeah. Hall of Fame, 1999 draft. First defensive player off the board.
No edge rusher guy? No, like, stud defensive lineman or crazy good line? A defensive back was the first.
Well, again, like, those crazy good defensive linemen got taken 2nd and 3rd and 5th. You have to find a very specific set of circumstances where the first defensive player didn't go. So who went before Champ Bailey? We mentioned those three quarterbacks.
1, 2, 3. Okay, 4, 5, 6.
Ooh, okay, Lord. Here are your hints. 2 running backs, household names, 1 in the Hall of Fame, 1 very famous for the way that he left football.
Okay, I like that clue. 1 very famous for how he left football.
Yep.
Okay.
And for how he was drafted.
Why would someone be famous for the way they left football? You kill me.
He probably celebrated.
God,
he probably celebrated very much 2 days ago, as anybody could or should.
Oh,
marijuana.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, guys, it's 8 o'clock. It's not 6.
No, we're way past 8 o'clock. We should be in break
yeah,
right
Sal's
now.
Yeah, Sal's at home going, he'll be on at 9.
You don't have this. Sal's screaming the answer. Sal, dial in and give these guys the answer. I mean.
I you don't need me to dial in. I'm already waiting.
Okay.
Yeah, he's been on for like
just go ahead
seven
and tell
minutes.
Him the answer so we can
what
get to your segment.
Who is it, Sal?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm
oh,
like,
good.
I literally
better.
Just put on, I go, are they, did they not go to break yet?
Running
and,
back,
and
marijuana.
Says,
1999
draft.
Famous for how he was drafted and how he left football.
Ricky Williams.
Correct. The other running back?
Oh, Lord.
The Hall of Famer.
Hall of
taken
Famer in 99.
One pick before?
I can't think.
Edgerrin James, also
James.
Single
right.
number. Wore number 5 in college. And the receiver was a guy that's not in the Hall of Fame that I think has a good case, Torrey Holt.
Oh, all right.
Andre Johnson.
1999 draft.
Sal, you're going to be, you're on an, go like, go cut the grass, walk the dog, you know, check in on the neighbors. You got time. He's on the way in a moment.
Yeah, I'm going to go downstairs and make a pot of coffee.
You could make a full breakfast, actually. We're put an omelet together.